November 30th, 2022, 12:14 hours, Ward Green here, just after noon time. Robert Fulton Cathcart III was a pioneer in medicine using vitamin C, and I'd like to play this video for you. I hope I get the volume level just about right here. We'll try this.
The original discovery back in 1969 was that the sicker a person was, the more ascorbic acid by mouth that they could take. And this was in the magnitude of like the average person with a cast iron stomach who doesn't have any trouble taking ascorbic acid can take 10 to 15 to 20 grams per 24 hours divided up into 4 to 6 doses before it produces diarrhea. Now this is, whenever I'm talking oral doses, I'm talking about ascorbic acid, and whenever I'm talking about intravenous, that I'm talking about sodium ascorbate. And we'll refer to the mineral ascorbates, but they're not what I've been talking about, and I find that I just don't get what I call the ascorbate effect. Now, the thing is, though, so this is the diarrhea produced, say, at 15 grams when a person is perfectly well. With just a mild cold, they may go up to 30 to 60 grams. And here, with a severe cold, maybe 100 grams. With influenza, 150 grams. And mononucleosis, sometimes in excess of 200 grams per 24 hours. I mean, clearly something was happening that I didn't learn in medical school. Now, subsequently, we've come to the conclusion that what happens is that the free radicals generated by these diseases destroy the ascorbate, and while the ascorbate is destroying the free radicals. By the way, part of my jargon here is that I realize that vitamin C and ascorbate are the same thing, but when I say ascorbate, I mean when I'm using it for the electrons carried, not for the vitamin C. And when I say vitamin C, I mean the tiny amount that you need for vitamins. And I want to make this very clear, that the reason for these enormous doses is not for the vitamin C particularly. It's for the electrons or the reducing equivalents carried by the vitamin C. I think that part of the problem, or the major problem, when we get sick, whenever we get an inflammation in a tissue, is that the mitochondria have been so damaged that they cannot keep up refueling the free radical scavengers. You know, there are two types of free radical scavengers. There are the enzymatic free radical scavengers like catalase that will destroy peroxide, and it just sits there and does its thing over and over again without the input of energy. But then there are free radicals like the hydroxyl free radical, rancid fats and so forth, that do not have a specific enzymatic free radical scavenger and have to have a non-enzymatic free radical scavenger, which is an electron donor, to neutralize it. And so once a non-enzymatic free radical scavenger like vitamin C gives up its 2 extra electrons, it's useless until it gets refueled by the mitochondria. And this is a very dynamic process. And what this titrating to bowel tolerance revealed, that this was of a magnitude which was just totally unsuspected. In fact, I find that some of the very sophisticated literature on free radicals these days, that they don't seem to have a clue as to the magnitude of the free radicals. I mean, can you imagine how many free radicals are causing this increased tolerance from, say, 15 grams to over 200 grams when you have mononucleosis? And that's a lot of extra electrons. See, what happens is that ascorbate is very stable in solutions now or in the body, and breaks down only to dehydroascorbate at first through the ascorbate free radical. But the point is that dehydroascorbate is very unstable, and if it's not re-reduced back to ascorbate very rapidly, it's irreversibly lost. So that if you have in a tissue, if the mitochondria can't re-reduce the dehydroascorbate back to ascorbate almost instantly, then all of this ascorbate-dehydroascorbate redox couple is lost in the tissue, and you have this condition I call acute induced scurvy. This doesn't mean that you have scurvy all over the body, but you do have scurvy in the tissues involved in the inflammation. So that one of the things that we get with the moderately high doses is that we reverse the acute induced scurvy. But, and this is the reason why, say, children with a chronic otitis media may be treated with antibiotics and have their ears drained and go on and be sick for long, long periods of time. And then you give them massive doses of ascorbate, then they suddenly get well. And the reason is that the white cells, it's a non-controversial fact that white cells need a little bit of vitamin C for phagocytosis. And when they have this condition of acute induced scurvy in the depths of these infected parts, then the white cells are pretty powerless to destroy anything. The only thing that really saves us is that antibodies build up. It's interesting that white cells are incapacitated by the lack of ascorbate. I think antibodies are actually activated. There are studies which indicate, and I'll go into this a little bit more later, antibodies, the affinity of antibodies for their antigen increases in an oxidative redox potential, which for the lay people here means that the tendency for the antibodies to grab hold of their antigen, whatever it is increased when there are a lot of free radicals around. So that the way we treat patients mostly is with oral ascorbic acid, and you do what I call titrate to bowel tolerance. Now, I start people out on ascorbic acid powder because ascorbic acid powder mixed in water and carefully sort of try to keep it off your teeth as much as possible, has a very rapid onset, which you can feel in your head. And this is sort of like, how do I know when you're hungry? I don't know, you know. And so I teach a process whereby the person, the patient themselves determines the amount of ascorbic acid they need. The other advantage of the powder is that when you overshoot and get diarrhea, it's not gonna last as long. Imagine the situation if you started getting diarrhea and had 30 grams of tablets as yet undissolved inside yourself, you would be in big trouble for a few hours. So the powder is rapid in, rapid out. Now, as soon as the patient determines the dose that they need to take under the certain circumstances, then I switch them over to the tablets. I really like the tablets a little bit more. They're more convenient. You can carry them around in the pocket. I mean, I carry these around and take them all day long. You might say, gosh, that's dirty to have it in your pockets. I'll tell you, those of us who take ascorbate, the last thing that we worry about is common dirt. I think that this is why wild animals make ascorbate. When they eat all this dirty stuff off the ground, you know, you see what a cat or a dog or a rat or whatever eats off the ground. You wonder, why is it they don't get sick? Well, I think the reason is that they make ascorbate very rapidly, and this neutralizes the toxins of all these dead, decaying foods. It's interesting that all the other animals except for man, monkey, and guinea pig, and there's an African food-eating bat, don't make ascorbate. And I've often said that if you can't give it to anything but man, monkey, or guinea pig, you try vitamin C on it, and you're likely to cure it. The guinea pig, I think, is an example. Monkeys are too expensive to use routinely in testing human diseases, so why do we pick on the poor guinea pig? Well, the guinea pig doesn't make ascorbate, and so you can give it human diseases. I have a friend, Wendell Belfield, down in San Jose, who's a veterinarian who has been curing dogs of distemper and kennel fever for about 15 years with intravenous ascorbate. And it seems what happens here, see, picture that if the disease is way out here, say it's a 300, 400 gram disease, and that the dog is capable of, say, making this amount of ascorbate, that means he can't get any of these diseases back here. I mean, isn't it interesting?
He's talking about 300 grams per day.
How dogs don't catch colds, and people will, or bacteriologists will say, well, they don't catch colds because colds are species specific. Well, you know, there are about 100 different viruses that cause colds in human beings, and there's not even one that causes a cold in a dog. Come on. So the thing is that dogs, wild animals don't get sick down here, you see. And so when they get sick, they're way up here. They're in big trouble. And so anyway, but if they are up in here, you can give them intravenous ascorbate, carry them through for a few days, drop the disease back down to this point.
So dogs make their own vitamin C, but if they get a bad enough infection, there's nothing that they can do unless you can give them intravenous vitamin C, according to this, or ascorbate, according to what he's saying. I just want to mention, I got a sore throat again this morning, so I know it's not something that's, it feels like it's definitely some kind of infection, so I've started taking vitamin C again, and I'm very glad I watched this video, because this is explaining the very problem I had when I took too much ascorbate the last time I had an infection just a few days ago. I had another sore throat. And I don't know, in this case, it could also be caused by food poisoning or by my, you know, by my soup not being cooked well enough. It could be that, but it could be some virus that I pick up when I go out shopping and or something. It could even be COVID. I'll be looking for what symptoms I have, but I'm trying to make it go away before I get any real symptoms besides a little bit of sore throat. So very slight sore throat at this point, very slight. But it's that kind of sore throat that doesn't go away, you know, and it gets worse. Or when you eat something, it doesn't go away. You know how it feels when you're coming down with a strep throat, or I do know how that feels, and that's what it feels like. So I need to treat it immediately, because then I won't have to take so many grams per day of vitamin C to make it go away. I can keep it down in the lower ranges of maybe I'll only have to take 20 grams a day, or maybe, or 10 or something. So far I've taken 6 or 8 grams. What have I taken? Let's see. Yeah, 8. I've taken 8 grams. 4 grams were a Jameson brand vitamin C, which had other things in it, like bioflavonoids. And then I realized, after watching this video, it's better just to take the ascorbate, because it's less complicated. It's far, far better to keep things simple. So the ascorbate, and that's exactly what Dr. Cathcart recommends here. The late Dr. Cathcart recommends here is to use ascorbate, or ascorbic acid powder, he calls it. Ascorbic acid powder. I think that's what he called it. But he calls it ascorbic acid, but it's ascorbate is also another name. It means exactly the same.
And they're well. So, anyway, this is what Belfield does. He's an orthomolecular veterinarian. Let's see.
There. Now, I've just noticed, I seem to notice I might be reaching bowel tolerance now, actually, with 8 grams. So, whatever it is, I might be getting diarrhea. But he mentions in this talk that, that was the end of the talk, by the way. That was it. It's a 9-minute talk. It's on the website visionearth.org, but he's on YouTube in places too. At least he was fairly recently that I was aware of. I mean, he gives talks on vitamin C and explains how many animals can produce their own vitamin C. But really, a lot of what he says is controversial, because he's the only one who knows about these things. He's one of the few who knows anything, but he's the only one who knows the specific things that he talks about, because he's a very advanced researcher on the subject of vitamin C. He's got very advanced information, very, you know, detailed, specific knowledge about how ascorbate works in the human body, which I didn't realize or fully appreciate. When I first learned about Dr. Cathcart, I didn't realize the specificity of his knowledge and how focused it is. You know, how he's not a common kind of doctor. Like there aren't that there is no one else who knows the specific things that he knows. He's a very specifically, a specifically vitamin C oriented doctor. But also, even though there are other doctors who are involved with vitamin C, definitely, the knowledge that Dr. Cathcart had is just unique to a very high degree of specificity. So, you know, there I found a video right there. But I look for videos and I look for Robert Cathcart III and nothing else comes up. Look at this. I'm sure there's more information. I know there is, or there was very recently, a lot of information. Where can we go? Let's go to all Robert Cathcart III. Well, let's say Robert F. Cathcart. That'll be more specific. And also, he's mentioned on the website DrYourself.com. That's Andrew Saul's website. He's a vitamin. A vitamin promoter, because he himself has used many vitamins. Andrew Saul he calls himself the mega vitamin man. Some people call it orthomolecular medicine, where we take vitamins and things like that because of the properties of the molecules of those vitamins. And so it's called orthomolecular. And there are very much more than just a few doctors involved in that field, I would believe, but I don't really know exactly how many doctors are involved in that. There it is. There's an organization called orthomolecular.org. And they have this. Look, okay. Dr. Cathcart also developed a hip prosthesis, according to that there. I have not read that. But there was a website where there were videos on YouTube. I don't know. Let's look for YouTube. Yeah, let's search YouTube. Let's specifically say YouTube and see what we find here. There's a YouTube right there. Yeah, there's a YouTube video right there. So if you search for YouTube, you will find stuff or something. Here's one here, you see. I have to watch more about this, because it's something that I know works. It works to cure infection, because I've used it many times myself to avoid getting any full-blown infection. But look, it's trying to load this page. It's not loading. Oh, there. What's there it is. Yeah. This talk I saw. I've seen this talk. Yeah. So this is another talk by Robert Cathcart, and he's also called Robert Fulton Cathcart III, and it's 25 minutes long. Yeah, I've seen that talk though. That one I've seen. But there's another one, another website where there used to be a website anyway. I'm trying to remember. It's it had very short videos, but many, many different videos, and many of these videos were made by an interviewer who was interviewing Robert F. Cathcart III, the same doctor. Now maybe it's not easy to find, but it should be possible to find it, I would think. Let's see. This is it here, I think, maybe. There's a playlist. Yeah, this is a playlist. Look, all his videos are right on this playlist. But it's from a website. There it is, from omarchives.org. That's where that's almost certainly the website. where if I go to omarchives.org, or anyone who's interested can go there. Maybe it's not there. Maybe it is. Let's see. It's Orthomolecular Archives. That's what that stands for. And we can look up now. That's too small, the text. Let's make it bigger. Orthomolecular Medicine. That's what OM stands for. omarchives.org. It was on this website, I believe, that these... There, video archives right here. See that? Click on that link. Robert Cathcart, and then if you click on that, I believe we'll see all the... There's a video index. A librarian who weighed 98 pounds took a pound of vitamin C in 48 hours. That's a 21-second clip talking about that. And she cured mononucleosis by doing that. That's just one example, but that's a video here, right? Which is, I believe it's a video. It used to be, anyway. If we click on it, it goes to YouTube. Or we can watch it on YouTube.
And then I realized the magnitude of this phenomenon when this 23-year-old, 98-pound lady librarian came in with severe mononucleosis. She ate a pound of ascorbic acid in 24 hours, a pound of ascorbic acid in 2 days without so much as gas. This was over 200 grams per 24 hours.
Right. A pound of anything, by the way, is 454 grams. Just for information purposes. Well, I mean, there are so many things I would love to talk about, and I can't. I just feel like I'm struggling to come up with a way that I can share everything with you that I want to share, because it's very difficult to share everything. But here's a video about a man making shoes, which I thought was extremely interesting. This on YouTube as well. But one of the things that Robert Cathcart mentioned to do with ascorbate, which I did not learn until just today, was the idea that he's been saying this all along, but I wasn't learning it. I guess he's been trying to communicate this all this time, that when we're trying to take ascorbate, we want to take just enough to reach bowel tolerance, and we don't want to go beyond bowel tolerance, because if we go beyond bowel tolerance, it's not as effective anymore, you know, and we just end up, we have to stop taking it, for one thing, because we've reached the limit of what our bowels can handle. So in order to fight infection in the most efficient way, we want to just take it, just take as much ascorbate in water as our bowel can tolerate without having diarrhea. And then we want to maintain that amount of ascorbate until the infection's completely gone. That's what he's saying, and I missed that point. And that's why the other day, it's one of the reasons why the last infection I had, I took 36 grams of vitamin C on the second day after 24 grams the first day, but I took 36 grams and I was taking it in bulk quantities at one point where I took it too fast. But at some point, I'm not sure. I mean, it's not that important right now. I'll look at it later, but I'll need to look at it to figure it out, whether I took it all at once. Some of the 36 grams I took in large quantity, like 12 gram amounts or something like that. But the other parts of it, I was taking, once I switched to a sorbate, I was taking 2 grams every 20 minutes. So, and I don't think that I did what he was saying, which was talking about being in trouble for several hours if you had 30 grams of sorbate in your stomach and you'd already reached the point of diarrhea and you had not even had those 30 grams reach your bowel yet. So the bowel can only tolerate so much sorbate, and the infection destroys the sorbate before it reaches the bowel. But if it reaches the bowel, you have diarrhea, and if you've got diarrhea and you still have sorbate in your stomach, you're in trouble. That's what he was saying. I had a huge amount of stomach pain because of gas. I had gas the day that I took 36 grams, but I also drank some milk or took some other type of food, which I should not have taken during that period when I was taking the sorbate. You have to eat, though, I think. I've eaten today. I've had some milk. I had goat's milk this morning. I'm not sure whether the milk is what caused my problem the other day. I need to look it up, though. I need to look it up right now because of the milk. But it was very interesting what happened the other day. Where's my... Okay. What's this? Here it is. Yeah, this is it here, I think. I took... On day two, I took 6 and then 12. That was at 1,300 hours. So this is... 9 hours later, I started taking 2 grams every 20 minutes. So I didn't really have any problem at that point until I started taking the 2 grams every 20 minutes. And then, the next day after that, that was the day I had all the problem with my stomach. But I didn't make any note about what I ate, actually. It's in the video, I guess. It's in the video that I made. That was for the 16th. But I made the video, November 16th was when I took the vitamin C. That was day two of my infection for 2022, November 16th. But I didn't make the video until several days later. So it might be from the 19th, that video, or the 18th, 19th, or 20th, or 21st. I'm not sure when I made the video. But I had these notes to go by, and I had my memories at that time. I must have taken something like, I took some milk or dairy product, maybe because I was trying to neutralize the effect of the acid or something. I'm not sure why I took it, but I wasn't taking it just because I wanted to eat, I don't think. I felt like the vitamin C was too acidic, or the ascorbate was, it felt like I needed to eat something, so I that's why I took the dairy product. But in retrospect, it was probably a mistake. But today, I took my milk just as a breakfast food this morning while I was... I started with vitamin C before I even started the milk, but I was taking... only 2 grams of vitamin C. I wasn't taking large quantities. I was taking 2 grams of the Jameson. I think I've reached bowel tolerance right now, possibly, with 8 grams of vitamin C. But my throat is not sore right now because that it feels like the vitamin C is making the sore throat go away, and that's what happens. That wouldn't happen if I weren't taking the ascorbate. And it's not vitamin C, it's specifically ascorbate, which is a specific form of vitamin C. Although I took 4 grams of the Jameson vitamin C slow release beforehand. So I've taken 4 grams of Jameson and 4 grams of the ascorbate. But the ascorbate is the one I'm going to be using from now on. Because that's what Dr. Cathcart recommended. And his method is the method used by Andrew Saul. And it's, it was used effectively by Andrew Saul with his 2 children to raise them to adulthood without using antibiotics. So I know it's a good method, but I just have to use the right amount of ascorbate is the goal. That's the goal, is to get the right amount of ascorbate to make the infection go away and not develop any real serious infection. Because the more serious the infection gets, the more grams of ascorbate you have to take each day in order just to keep it from getting out of control. So right now my sore throat's going away, right? And that's often what happens with these infections. You often take maybe 8 grams and your infection goes away. Your infection goes away if it's just starting, if it's the beginning, the first few symptoms, the first initial symptoms of that infection. And it doesn't matter if it's viral infection, it doesn't matter bacterial or viral, it doesn't make any difference. Ascorbate will make it go away. That's the wonderful truth about this treatment, is it's efficacious or effective on any infection. Of course, other than AIDS, because AIDS is a genetic infection. You can't fix your DNA if you have AIDS. It's not as simple to fix the DNA, but you can make the symptoms go away with AIDS, but it requires huge amounts of vitamin C every day. And these amounts that he's talking about are, you take the amount every day until the infection's gone. But in the case of AIDS, you'd have to take every day and keep on, because it would not cure the AIDS, which has a genetic component to it. But any infection that is otherwise not like AIDS, that has no genetic component, any other infection of any kind, like mononucleosis or hepatitis or pneumonia or a cold or a flu or a strep throat or whooping cough or anything you can name, polio or measles or anything, mumps, any infection is cured with vitamin C. And once you cure it, you stop taking the vitamin C if you want. You don't have to take vitamin C every day, although some people take a certain amount every day just to prevent infection. But that's not necessary. Once the infection is cured, you don't need to take vitamin C. Now, there are many people who don't, for some reason, they don't choose to use this treatment, and they have to suffer through the infection and hope that they survive it. I mean, that's just the way those things are. And I used to be one of those people who didn't know about vitamin C either. I had no idea that it was effective. I'm just very grateful to know about it. So I guess I'll stop the video right now. This is a phenomenal video about shoemaking. It just made me, it inspired me. It still does. It inspires me to think that I can do anything. When I watch this video about how this man makes shoes by hand, of course, and it makes me wonder, how could you make shoes any other way except by hand? That's the other thing it made me wonder. But I'll just say, coming back to infections, I want to just say that you never know how much vitamin C it's going to take. And you don't have to keep taking vitamin C, but there's no reason to stop taking it if you still have some symptoms of infection. But I mean, if you can stop at any time and just allow the infection to run its course if you so choose, but then you might be sick for 7 days or 2 weeks or whatever it takes to get rid of the infection, or you might die. Even in some cases, some people die of infections like COVID, etc. But if you take vitamin C for any infection, you can also choose to keep taking the vitamin C. As Dr. Cathcart says, he calls it titrate to bowel tolerance. We can titrate to bowel tolerance by monitoring our symptom. Like I can feel the ascorbate now in my head. Like he's saying, you can feel it. You feel it in your body. You feel it affecting you. And I feel the ascorbate right now. I feel I'm probably near to bowel tolerance also. So I'm not going to take any more until I feel the sore throat coming back again, or you know, until I feel like I'm not going to get better. If I'm not going to get better, I'll have the option of taking more ascorbate. And that's basically all there is to it. But if you take it until the infection goes away, you'll never get an infection. That's the reality. You never get the full-blown infection. Because vitamin C, in the form of ascorbate, has that effect of, like he says, it destroys certain aspects of that infection. And that infection, in turn, destroys the ascorbate, which prevents you from reaching the limit of what your bowels can handle, because the ascorbate never reaches your bowels if it gets destroyed along the way in fighting the infection. But he was a genius. Robert Cathcart was a genius. And he still lives on in the teaching that he's passed on to many people who actually follow this treatment path. They follow this. Many of us do. I believe there are many of us, but it's certainly a small number compared to the majority of people in the world. But there are many of us who do follow this therapy of ascorbate treatment for infection. It just means having ascorbate on hand. You can keep it in your fridge. You can keep a kilogram of it in your fridge, or I've got several kilograms in my fridge, I guess, but or several pounds. I'm not sure exactly what units or how much of it I have, but I have enough for a few more infections yet. I don't know how I got this infection. I do know I cooked my soup a little less than the full amount yesterday, but I mean, I don't think it's not likely, but that could be what caused it. But I have no idea what causes these infections at this time of year, though. I used to get infections at this time of year, and so my body is just, typically susceptible. And so I think that's why I'm getting these infections. But I won't let them get the better of me. If I can have anything to do with it, I'll take ascorbate. So it's just far less unpleasant to take ascorbate rather than to have these infections. They're much more unpleasant than taking ascorbate, plus the fact I don't have any loss of productivity during the time I'm taking the ascorbate, or very little loss of productivity, because I don't develop any symptoms other than the sore throat, a very slight sore throat in the case of the infections that I have experienced recently and that I'm experiencing now. I had only one other infection recently, but the one right now is the one I'm talking about when I say there's more than one infection. I've had the one that I'm having now, plus I had one a few days ago. What was it? I said it was the 16th. Two weeks ago, I had this other infection, and it went away. But, you know, there's another thing I want to talk about. I just started taking menotetrinone yesterday, and I took 4 more drops of it after midnight last night. So when you start any new vitamin, that changes your whole body. This is a new vitamin that I haven't taken. It made me feel different, but not in a bad way. And also, it may well have caused these virus and bacteria. It's usually virus, I think, that hides in your body. It hides in your bones, and it comes out when you take really good vitamins and powerful food. You know, when you take a new vitamin that you've never taken before, all of a sudden this virus that's been hiding in your bones can come out of your bones and, you know, infect you, and then it leaves and it's gone forever. But there could be viruses that are stored in our bodies, whether it's our bones or our tissues, somewhere in our bodies for many years. I believe that, and that's why these infections that we call infections, sometimes they're not infections really at all. They're healing crises. It's a crisis where our body is getting rid of a virus that it's had for many years that's been just hiding and suppressed somehow in our body. And that virus manifests itself because it's being threatened. Its existence is threatened by this new vitamin. So it comes out from out of hiding and starts to fight against our body. It fights for its existence, but it loses the battle when we take ascorbate. But whether we take ascorbate or not, once that virus is gone, it's gone for good. If it was one of these viruses that just hides and that was in hiding in our bodies. Because that's called a healing crisis, as I just said. It's not necessarily the same thing as catching a virus from someone else. If it came from inside us, we caught it from someone else, but many years ago. We got a virus, we picked it up from, or we could have gotten it from food years ago, or from some other way, from some other means. My stomach's gurgling. Yeah, I've reached bowel tolerance, but I have to go because I'm going to have to take a bathroom break here as well. But no, I mean, I'm reaching bowel tolerance, but it's not something where I have to run to the bathroom, but it's something where it could develop into that if I were to take more ascorbate. So I'm not going to take more ascorbate just yet because I've reached bowel tolerance. When I reach bowel tolerance with 8 grams, so that doesn't suggest to me a very significant infection. The infection that I'm having here is not a very big infection. If I can reach bowel tolerance with only 8 grams, that's not much, which is good. That's good. The less it takes, the better. You don't want to eat 200 grams of vitamin C in one day, but those were the levels he was talking about. People can take 200 grams in one day if they're severely infected. I have, since I've learned about this, I have tended to take my vitamin C. It used to be I would take a chewable vitamin from Natural Factors that had all the bioflavonoids in it. It was a chewable flavored vitamin C, chewable by Natural Factors. That's what I used to take, and that worked. It was just as effective. Maybe it was more effective because it had the bioflavonoids, but the ascorbate might not be able to be as effective because it doesn't have as many of these other cofactors. So maybe I should be taking the chewable, but it's much more expensive, though, to buy the chewable also. But it might be, if it's more effective, if it's a lot more effective, it might be less expensive because it's more effective. But yeah, I'm not certain that ascorbate is the best way to do it. But certainly some form of vitamin C. All of them work too, I believe. They all work. They may not be equally effective, but they all work. It was ascorbate that Robert Cathcart was the most interested in. He was a specialist in the use of ascorbate, the simple ascorbate powder. And he used it because when you take ascorbate, you could monitor what the symptom was, and you would know when you'd reached bowel tolerance, right? You yourself would feel it even before the bowel started to move. You can feel it in your body, taking action against you. You know, it's different from an infection, but it's like the same way you can feel an infection. You can feel an infection, but you can also feel ascorbate. It's ascorbate in a sense also infects your body in a different way, in a healthy way, but it infects you in a way where you can feel it as well. You feel the ascorbate. It occupies you, you know, and you can feel it taking place in your body. Look at this. So he does so many different procedures on these shoes. Watching this video, like I was saying, it makes me think I can do anything. I can glue leather. I've already known that before. I can, you know, I've got Goop, which is a very good glue. But I could get other types of glue that can do it too. But I can learn how to cut leather or how to shape it or how to... It makes me convinced that I can fix my own shoes. That's one thing it convinces me of. And it also gives me confidence that maybe I should try to do more with my shoes. I just glued my shoes yesterday, actually. I've got to go fix something in my car. I've got to go put something out in my car today. My battery placeholder, a box that I keep in my battery compartment in my car, because I bring the battery in the house just to charge the battery. That battery compartment, I need to fill it with a box. And the box sort of came unglued. I need to get that box back out there after I just glued it. I want to get it back out there to keep the rodents out of my battery compartment in the wintertime, so I've got to put that back today. But that reminds me, I also want to say something about lead-acid batteries, because lead-acid batteries are something that they can get sulfated, right? And I had an internal resistance of 3.20 milliohms in my lead-acid battery for my car, which is a good, healthy, low internal resistance. And the charging capability of that battery was something like 1080 or 1070 cold cranking amps. That's 1070 or 1080. 1,000, over 1,000 cold cranking amps. But when I had a problem with my SRS light coming on, I wanted to make a test to find out what was causing that using the... I think it's OBD, is that what it's called? Yeah, onboard diagnostics or something it's called, or something like that, I think. The OBD computer system in the car that has in any car that has these OBD connectors, if it has a connector for these diagnostic devices, you can plug in a scanner and scan the computer code. So I wanted to scan it, but I didn't realize I had to keep the car running when I'm scanning, because it depletes the battery of the car. So my battery went down to below 12 volts during the time when this diagnostic was being run. So when I brought the battery back in the house, I checked it, and it, you know, I was, before I charged it up, I checked to see how many cold cranking amps it had, and the cold cranking amps had decreased down to 900 and something, but or 800 and something, I think. Yeah, eight high 800s. But that was still very healthy, because it's only a 700 cold cranking amp battery, right? It's not supposed to deliver more than 700 cold cranking amps. So it was still in the healthy range by far. It was still, but I noticed the problem was that the internal resistance had gone up to 3.24 at that point. If this number's not right, it's something close to that. It's approximately right, what I'm saying is approximates closely to the truth. But it had gone up from 3.20 up to some other number. I think it was 3.24, which is, that made me worried, because I know it only worries me because I know that the internal resistance gradually goes up over the life of the battery. So I just lost, in my mind, a chunk of life of that battery, a big chunk, because it went up significantly from 3.20 to 3.24. I thought this battery's now, it's now on the way out. You know, it's on its last, not on its last legs. The internal resistance would go up to 4 and 5 milliohms and much higher than that before the battery's dead or useless. And there still are ways to recover that battery, which I want to investigate later too. Even if the internal resistance is as high as 5 or 6 or 7 milliohms or even higher, I'm still going to investigate that. But 3.24 was devastating to me, because this battery had gotten lower since the time I bought it. It had been something like 3.24 in the past, I think, and it had gone down to 3.20 during the time when I had been maintaining it, because I always keep it charged, which tends to reverse sulfation. And that when you reverse sulfation, the internal resistance goes down. So I'd been keeping this battery, and I'd gotten it down to 3.20, and I was very, in a sense, almost proud of that. But then it went up to 3.24 because of this diagnostic procedure that I had just run. So I charged it for a few more days, and recently I looked at it, and it was 3. I never test them before I drive the car, so I didn't check it before I drive the car. I generally check it when I get back. So when I got back from my shopping yesterday, I checked it, and it was 3.17 or 1.8, I forget, but it was lower than 3.20. Now it's better than it's ever been. This is the lowest internal resistance that this battery's ever had, and the cold cranking amps were 1073, I believe. 1073, I believe, was the number. I wrote them down, but they're in the basement, the numbers that I wrote down. It was 1073. I'll transfer them to my notebook, Jehovah willing. But 1073 is very healthy, but the thing I was most impressed about was the 3.17 internal resistance. The lower that internal resistance, normally the higher the cold cranking amps, can be, the higher the cold cranking amps are going to be. The higher the number of cold cranking amps is going to be that battery can deliver. But that also raises another question in my mind. Why didn't it go above 1073 since it went down to 3.17? It should be higher, because I was up to 1080 before with that battery, and that was when it was, that was with an internal resistance of 3.20. So I'm studying these lead acid batteries, and this is my newest lead acid battery, the one that I've just been talking about. The name I gave this battery was Pierre. I give my batteries names just to identify them. So this battery is my newest one. I bought it at Princess Auto, actually. I think it's called ProPoint or something like that. But it's a brand name that Princess distributes, whatever that brand name is. But it's called Pierre, this battery. That's the name I gave it. Him, I guess the name I gave him. He's got a name. But I will try to take good care of my batteries, so I always, and I've been doing that by taking them in, bringing them in the house. Every time I use my car, except for my summer car, of course, the summer car, I don't feel the need to bring the battery in the house every day. I'll just charge it, plug it into a maintenance charger, while the car is not in use, and I'll leave it. I'm trying to remember if I disconnect it or not. When I do that, I think I disconnect it from the car at the same time as I do that. I think that's what I've been doing. It isn't necessary to disconnect the battery, but the only disconnect is the ground. You disconnect the ground terminal of the battery if you want to disconnect them, but you can charge them using a maintenance charging device. I have the Optimate, which I was using, but that one I used during the summer on my lawnmower battery. My riding mower needs a maintenance battery because that battery was also deteriorating, and it's near the end of its life because its internal resistance has gone up and reduced its cold cranking amps down below the rated number. So it's a 300 cold cranking amp battery, and it was below 300. Even when it's fully charged, it's slightly below its rated, you know, even when it's right charged, just at the very peak voltage, even when its voltage is 13.5 volts or something, it's still just under 300 amps, which is, it means it's past its prime of life, definitely, but it still starts my lawnmower, and I keep it charged all the time on the maintenance charge, right? I mean, it's always connected to this charger. No, I think the charging device I used on my summer car was the other newest one that I got, which is another brand. It's not the Optimate. But Optimate is one brand of charger, and then I have another one called the Eliminator, which is a Canadian Tire brand charger. That's the one I'm using now on my newest battery. It seems to work well. It'll maintain a battery once it's done charging. The light changes from amber to green, and then it's gone into maintenance mode when it does that. And they all have their own circuitry, these different chargers do, for doing maintenance. And I'm not sure what the advantages or disadvantages of all these different methods and technologies are, because there are so many different methodologies with regard to this. Yeah, my bowels are gonna have to evacuate themselves or pretty soon. That's what my body's telling me. But that's a good sign that I've taken enough vitamin C. I don't have to take any more. I know that, right? But if you reach bowel tolerance, Dr. Cathcart was saying, you know, it's probably just short of bowel tolerance is where you want to be, or, you know, you don't want to take any more at that point. That's the thing. So right now my bowels can tolerate it because I don't have to run to the bathroom. I'm still within the range of bowel tolerance, right? It's still, I mean, I'm not running away. What was I trying to do? I'm not running off in that direction toward the bathroom. That means I'm in a good state of tolerance. You know, my bowel can tolerate. Now my sore throat is, you know, non-existent, but I'm still aware. So I think I might have beaten this infection already. It's possible. Every infection is different, but some of them go away exactly like this one, where you take 6 or 8 grams and it's gone. And sometimes I don't even reach bowel tolerance. If the sore throat goes away, I don't even reach the limit. You know, I mean, it just, the sore throat goes away, and you can stop taking the vitamin C, and if it doesn't come back, your infection's cured. So anyway, the batteries, I did want to mention that I learned something new about this battery's charging cycle, its charging life, and that is that I was able to improve its internal resistance, which is shocking. That never happens. It's never happened to me in my life yet. In my experience, I've never improved the internal resistance of a battery by that much in such a short time, in any way, ever, in any length of time either. I mean, but there's a method that I heard about on YouTube, that Tony's Garage, Uncle Tony's Garage, shared this with me, and it was about using a welding machine to increase the charging current on your batteries and reverse sulfation. So that can be done too. I believe, and but you can also do it using using your own circuitry, for which I bought some components. Specifically, I bought an inverter, or I should say a rectifier. What is it I bought? A bridge? A diode bridge? What was it? A bridge rectifier or some kind of a... It's a DC rectifier, so I can produce a DC voltage from AC house current. So, and I also bought a capacitor that can be connected to the rectifier, so that I can build the circuit I need to do this charging. But I never built the circuit. I never got around to it because I bought all these other chargers. I guess that's why, because I decided to buy these, or I became occupied in a different aspect. I employed a different procedure, which was the idea of bringing the battery in the house every time and maintaining it every single time I drove the car. So I did not need, because I bought a new battery, I didn't need to rejuvenate the old one, but I have one old battery that's a potential candidate for this rejuvenation process. So I'm thinking about that as well. That's enough for now. I think that was the shoe video that I watched the other day that was so fascinating to me. There's so much to learn about everything, and there's not time enough in the day to do everything, nor to share everything, but to explore everything, there's not time enough in the day to explore all the recycling of these lead acid batteries. I mean rejuvenating, not recycling. The rejuvenating of the battery using high voltage. You can use high voltage. High voltage and significant, you know, charging currents can be produced by using high enough voltages, and that can reverse sulfation. We have to be very careful, because you could kill yourself, for one thing, in trying to connect a circuit with a high voltage, as high as your house. Which these kind of voltages can be very deadly if you're not careful, and capacitors can store enough charge to kill you in one jolt, or stop your heart, that is. So I mean, it's very dangerous to even experiment with these things. I mean, it's extremely dangerous. That's another reason why I wasn't probably hasty about it. But using a welding machine is a great idea, because you don't have to build a circuit. Just use the welding machine circuit to produce the necessary voltage that can do the job for you. And I thank you for that, Tony, because that was a great idea. I mean, according to Uncle Tony's Garage on YouTube, he rejuvenated one of his batteries, and the battery stayed good after that, after it was rejuvenated. But I don't know, you know, I'm still waiting to decide. The battery that I want to rejuvenate is not completely dead yet. It still has the ability to start my car. So I've been waiting, even though I have three batteries for two cars, and they're all the same roughly the same specification. Two of them are almost new, but that third one is still functional, and I don't know whether I should risk, you know, trying to rejuvenate it. So I think that's the reason I haven't done it. It's because I'm not, it's like anything, you know, you're not a believer until you're a believer. It's like with vitamin C. I wasn't a believer until I tried it and it worked. But it took a long time to get to the point where I was willing to try it. Took a long time. I mean, I heard about it for years. I knew about Linus Pauling believed in vitamin C. I knew that for many years. It never interested me. It just didn't interest me. I guess I didn't believe it, though, obviously. If I'd believed it worked, I would have been interested immediately. Why would I want to be infected for 2 weeks with strep throat when I can just wipe it out immediately with a few grams of vitamin C? I mean, who would want to be infected? But it still didn't interest me at that time, because I didn't believe it. And we're brainwashed by the society around us to believe that these ideas don't work. They would have us believe that these things, like vitamin C, doesn't work. That's what they have you believe. And they use logic like, well, if it worked, everyone would be doing it. That's the logic they use, right? That's the logic I used to use, but that's false logic. You know, it works and nobody's doing it. That's the actual reality. Very few people are doing it, but there are, on the other hand, if we focus on the people who are doing it, there's a lot of us, I imagine, who are doing it. It's just that the world itself is completely oblivious, and the world is far in the majority under the influence of Satan, the devil, right? The devil controls everything, including the media and all the ways that people use to avoid finding out these wonderful things, like vitamin C and many other things like vitamin K2, which I'll be reporting on hopefully soon, which is the menotetranone MK4 form of vitamin K2, the calcium vitamin, which is in Japan, known to reverse osteoporosis by taking 45 milligrams of menotetranone, or maybe it's not menotetranone. I'm not sure which form of vitamin K2 they use in reversing osteoporosis. It might be menotetranone. But they take 45 milligrams per day, and it reverses osteoporosis, as has been published in medical journals. And it's accepted. It's just like Dr. Cathcart was saying, it's not controversial that white blood cells don't function in the presence of certain infection, the conditions of infection. White blood cells cannot function. That's not controversial, he says, and that's why we need these antibodies, these other antibodies. I didn't even know this, what I learned today from Dr. Cathcart. That's another thing that, you know, even though it's not controversial, that particular fact was not controversial, but the idea of using vitamin C is extremely controversial, and nobody's doing it generally because they don't know that it works, apparently, and they don't know it's harmless. It also doesn't harm you to take vitamin C. It's one of these vitamins, again, that's not very toxic at all. I don't think it is toxic really at all, but I'm not sure that it has the same, that it can make the same claim that vitamin K2 can, that it's got zero known toxicity. Zero known toxicity is a fantastic claim, it sounds like, but that's what is said about vitamin K2. So it's not dangerous, and it reverses osteoporosis in 45 milligram quantities, as reported by people in Japan. But think about that for a moment. 45 milligrams, how much is that? It's not very much. 45 milligrams per day of a substance called vitamin K2 reverses osteoporosis. So how powerful and how much potential does vitamin K2 have based on that? I mean, it's enormous. It's absolutely enormous, the potential for this vitamin. So I hope to report more about that if and when I learn about it, and if I stay alive in the meantime, which I also hope to do. So this has been Word Green, and it is November 30th, 2022. It's 1322 hours. I love you. Have a great day. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.